And welcome to the 500th episode of Travelers Radio. I wanted to get a horn, but I couldn't find one, so I have to wait for next New Year's Eve. But tonight we present an hour-long special featuring four great guests of the past, all specifically invited back for this occasion. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with co-host Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee, and we are in the 12th season of Travelers Radio, the show that lets you enjoy the pleasures of travel from the comfort of your armchair.
Every week at this time, we talk to people representing destinations, hotels, airlines, railroads, car rental companies, and others in the world of travel and hospitality, from authors and bloggers to broadcasters and publicists. If it's got anything to do with travel, it's got everything to do with Travelitch Radio.
And we have four guests on tonight's hour-long special. Jay Smith of Sports Travel and Tours, Sue Presby of the Mount Washington Cog Railway, Tony Mua of A Slice of Brooklyn Bus Tours, and Denise Seelman of the Phoenician, my favorite resort. So let's start with Jay Smith, the owner-operator of Sports Travel and Tours, based in Hatfield, Massachusetts. Jay, welcome to Travelitch Radio and our 500th anniversary special.
Thanks for having me, Dan, and this is awesome. 500th show. That is a wow, and if I would call it anything, it's a total grand slam. You rocked it, dude. 500 shows, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Congrats.
Thank you.
Jay, thanks to Sports Travel and Tours, anyone can go to any game, anytime, anywhere, and that includes the big ones like the All-Star Game in July and the World Series in October for baseball fans. Greyhound says leave the driving to us, but the motto could be leave everything to us for sports, travel, and tours. Would you explain?
Yeah, I guess that's the case, because that's pretty much our slogan is any game, any place, any time for any sport. If we can do it, we surely will. This came about. We plan it, we coordinate it, we put it together. You sit back and just let us know what you want, and we do all the work. We have wholesale rates, and we have a staff that coordinates it all, and whether you want to go independently with two people, 40 people on a group, or 400 people on a bigger group or an incentive program, we dot the I's, we cross the T's, and we make sure that every program that we sends out is a success. It's a lot of work, but it's fun because we deliver fun for people. That's the key.
And you have access to tickets and sports events that typical fans can't find, including things like the just-completed Masters Golf Tournament and the upcoming Baseball Hall of Fame inductions. So how does Sports Travel and Tours get those?
That's a fairly large answer. it really depends on a lot of avenues. It's a matter of what the event is first. There's lots of sponsors, advertisers, coaches, players, umpires, season's ticket holders, which are key in our mind. You know, season's ticket holders of, let's say, you know, Major League Baseball, they get 81 games to have to buy. And if they have two or four seats or six seats, they can't possibly go to 81 games. Mm-hmm. So we keep that in our database. We find what people want. So the answer really is depending on the game and the event and where people want to sit, that demands and kind of guides us as to where we need to go for those tickets. You know, a ticket, tickets that are three rows in back of the dugout for a, you know, a World Series game are not going to be purchased in the box office.
No.
That would be a, you know, Major League Baseball tickets or season's ticket holders that got the availability of the tickets. And sometimes people look to make some, you know, a lot of money. You can pretty much get, I've said this many times in my life, you can pretty much get anything that you want with one thing, and that's money. The only thing you can't buy for money is your health, but everything else has some kind of price tag.
Jay, having gone to Cooperstown with your company every year since 2014, I know you guys take care of accommodations, transportation, and ticketing to a crowded event where it's almost impossible to drive or reserve on your own. Isn't that a classic example of one-stop shopping for the sports fan?
Yes, the Hall of Fame induction is a great event to describe because it is really congested. There's, you know, could be 30, 40, 50, 80,000 people all in one place. The community itself is small. It only has, I think, 2 or 3,000 full-time all-year residents. And the town just is, it blossoms in one weekend. So because of our partnership with the Hall of Fame, we are able to not only drop people right off in front of the hall, we pick people up, we drop you right off at the Hall of Fame induction site, pick you right up at the site. So you don't have to park, you know, 3 or 4 or 8 miles outside of town, have to walk into town or look for shuttle buses. Again, it comes back down to the first question in regards to leaving everything to us. This is just another event that we take care of all of the details in order to give people a chance to enjoy themselves rather than having to worry about what they're doing.
I know that's a great idea because for years I didn't want to go to inductions because I thought it was too crowded and too crazy, and I'm glad I found Sports Travel and Tours. So, Jay, how long has Sports Travel and Tours been operating, and how did you become the official tour operator of the Baseball Hall of Fame?
This Sports Travel and Tours was incorporated in September of 1996. So we've been around a little longer than your than this show has been. and we did sign on with the Hall of Fame as their official licensed travel company in 2007, right just before, a few months before Cal Ripken got inducted. And it really came about, Dan, as a quick comment from me. We were already doing business with the Hall of Fame. We were not their partners at the time. And one of their marketing folks, Ken Meifert, I said to him at the time, I'm not leaving this planet until Sports Travel and Tours is hooked to the hip with the Baseball Hall of Fame because we have a perfect match. We have a round peg in a round hole. We operate and bring people to baseball games and events. The Hall of Fame is baseball, and we're going to make this happen. It took me 10 years to make it happen, but we've been their partner, and it's been a great ride and a great partnership. Our teams work very well together since 2007.
Now, Jay, are you able to get tickets to things like the London Series, the Field of Dreams game, the Little League Classic, things like that?
Yeah, sure. They're more, you know, one up. They're, you know, smaller events. They are starting to catch a little bit. The London Series, we actually have a program that is set to go. It's a 5-day program in June. It heads out on Thursday into London, obviously, and it does Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the two games, and leaves on Monday. It's got a bunch of other frills to it as well. So we surely do operate and can get those tickets as well. Sometimes, again, the Field of Dreams, there's minimal tickets and they're very costly. But if somebody would like to put the program for themselves together, we surely can do it. Most of the time when we plan a program for folks, even on an independent basis, we call it FIT, Flexible Independent Travel, it ends up being where we do all the work. And because of our rates, our wholesale rates, many times the price point, it could be the same or less than if you were to do it on your own. But even if it's the same, we do all the work for you. And we send you out a nice packet of information with where to go, what to do, how to get there. And even if you're doing your own program, we take care of all of the hassle out of it.
And you've done a great job of overcoming the setbacks, like the COVID-caused cancellation of the All-Star Game, the move of the All-Star Game from Atlanta to L.A., the date change of the Derek Jeter induction from July to early September. Don't you often have to do things last minute, such as getting tickets for playoff and World Series games almost immediately?
Yeah, those couple of events, the playoffs and World Series, are last minute. I was having a really good time on this interview and show until you reminded me of all of the things that we had to get through. And let me tell you, it's an amazing thing. I still have hair on top of my head, and that's some of it's gone. It has been a struggle. We have gotten through it all. You know, we had the recession as well. We had the lockout. You missed the lockout where there was no baseball for 4 months. But yeah, the getting those last minute events are a little more difficult because we don't know what city they're going to be in. You know, the World Series, the playoffs, things like that. We do have to jump through hoops rather quickly. We have a little formula ourselves that I'm going to keep to myself because it's a good hint in order for us to figure out where the final World Series or playoffs are going to be. But it is last minute. If the playoffs are over on a Sunday and the World Series is starting on Wednesday, you know, we've got to jump pretty quickly to develop it, plan it, you know, book it, and then operate it all in literally 3 days. But we're used to it. We understand it. It's not fun sometimes, but mm-hmm. we do indeed get it done.
Well, Jay, also, can you talk a little bit, do your passengers have to travel in groups, but you also talked about they can travel independently. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, the we do have we kind of call them pre-packaged programs. So our tour-related programs, a trip that, let's say, would do the West Coast ballparks and going from, you know, San Diego, Anaheim, the Dodgers, San Francisco and Oakland and Seattle. That would be a prepackaged tour program. It's all set up already, all planned out, and you look at it, and we have trips like that that are regionally all over the country. Our Midwest one, you know, would do Chicago, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Kansas City, and St. Louis as an example. And our East Coast programs, of course, do at Washington up to Boston with Baltimore, Philly, New York, and maybe Cooperstown in there as well. So they're pre-done programs, and you say, I like that. That's what I want to do. I want to get to every ballpark in the country, and these programs work perfectly for me. But there are people who would rather not travel as a group, or they have a certain only, you know, 4 days or 5 days they can travel, and we have a program. It's called Flexible Independent Travel, FIT, that we customize the program specifically to the liking of the traveler, where depending on which city they're in, the type of hotel that they'd like to stay in, the ballpark, the location in the ballpark that they would like to sit, and we customize it specifically for them, and then they go out and do it on their own. So we don't have a tour host on the program. It's an independent program, but we package it all up and make it as easy and hassle-free as we can with instructions and where to go and what to do and make it pretty simple.
Jay, where do you find your bus hosts and how do you train them?
Most of our hosts actually, other than Dan, most of our hosts have actually come from being customers. They travel on a program with us. They love what they do. They love what they did. And then they come back to us and they say, you know, gosh, this looks like so much fun. I love to travel. I love sports. This is something that I would love to be able to do. And we groom them. We have them go out on a trip or two or three as an assistant. And eventually once they, you know, get a little bit more in tune to what we do and how we do it, and we kick them out of the nest and they would run their own program.
Wow.
Jay, you get lots of repeat business. Is that because sports travel and tours adds little extras, such as talks by former umpire Al Clark or evening baseball lectures, giveaways like Hall of Fame pins, postcards, magazines, and memberships?
That is part of it. I think people nowadays, Dan, want experiences. You know, the big things take care of themselves. I can't make Yankee Stadium or Wrigley Field any better than they are. But it's the little in-between things that people can't get on their own that become special to our program. It takes, you know, I've said this many times, you can take most travel programs, and even from the other hosts that you'll have on or other guests that you'll have on, you know, everything is good. You can't have a bad experience going places and traveling and seeing things. If you do, there's something obviously wrong sometimes with the traveler. But in the case of us being the provider of things, there's not a lot. It doesn't take a lot to go from a good program to a great program. And it's the little things along the way that people can't get on their own, the small things along the way that people like, and those are the things that people go home and remember. And the games and the events and the things that they see are great, but it's the small things that really do add up and count. So our repeat business is incredible. We used to say, we used to be happy when it was 40%, then it got to 70%. And now we're hitting upwards of 80% return rate. So once somebody comes with us on a program, they do tend to come back again in future years.
Wow.
Jay, how to Travel Itch Radio listeners book trips and tickets as well as learn more about sports travel and tours?
Oh, well, that's easy. We, of course, have a website. It is just as the company sounds, sports with an S, travel and A-N-D, tours. .com. That's sportstravelandtours.com. And of course, we have an toll-free 800 line. It's 800-662-4424. That's 800-662-4424. And we're accessible pretty much. We're in East Coast time, but we do our hours are generally normal business hours from, 9 to 5, 5:30, Monday to Friday. But if you need us off hours, we're generally around as well.
That's Jay Smith of Sports Travel and Tours, a great guy and a great company, and I speak from personal experience. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for having me. I'll hopefully be around for the next 500.
Let's hope so. Okay, now let's bring in our second special guest, Sue Presby of the Mount Washington Cog Railway. And like Jay Smith, you are baseball, and you're based in the Northeast. Just want to make sure I have the right button here, and I do. Okay, Sue, you are live. Congratulations on winning that MVP award at the 2003 Red Sox Female Fantasy Camp.
Thank you. Thank you. Congratulations to both you and Mary Ellen on 500 shows. That's amazing. The Cog is only 154 years old, so I feel young compared to you right now. This was really hard coming after Jay because I've been taking notes during his entire interview. Before I get to the Cog, I do have to give a shout-out to sports. I have to give a shout-out to the Red Sox and, believe it or not, the Yankees, because those are the only two MLB franchises that have women's fantasy camps. So
Ooh.
That's my plug for both of them. So that's a really good thing. But the Cog is my baby.
I got to tell you, years ago I did the Cubs fantasy camp back in the 80s when Randy Hundley was running it. They had one female camper in that fantasy camp. One.
Wow. There are some women that do the men's camp, but they started the women's camp in 2016. And the Yankees and the Red Sox are the only two that do an absolutely all-female fantasy camp.
Okay, but Sue, let's talk trains. Yours climb Mount Washington, the tallest peak in the Northeast, and the one with great views when it's clear and wild weather conditions when it's not. Tell us about the Cog. How old is it? How long is it? And whether weather ever stops it.
Well, the Mount Washington Cog Railway is the oldest mountain climbing cog train in the world. As you said, it goes to the top of Mount Washington, which is the highest peak in the Northeast. It's 6,288 feet. The visibility on a clear day is, it can be up to 100 miles. You can see into Canada. You can see all the New England states. And I've actually been on the summit and seen the cruise ships in Portland Harbor and Portland, Maine, which is amazing. You brought up the wild weather, and it's considered to be the home of the world's worst weather. And we just passed an anniversary on the 12th of April. In 1934, they set a record of 231 miles per hour. That was the highest wind speed that was recorded by an instrument. And they're not sure if it actually went higher because the anemometer, I think that's what the word is, broke. So they actually got it at 231 miles an hour, which, interestingly enough, the weather is really the reason that the Cog was built. The person who's responsible for building the cog is Sylvester Marsh, who was in the 1800s a very successful meat packer in the Chicago area. He moved to the Boston area, and he and his pastor decided they were going to go hiking. So they went to Mount Washington, and the base of Mount Washington is about 2,700 square feet. That's the altitude. So it was a beautiful day. They started hiking up from the base, and as is known to happen, the weather changed on a dime, and they hit this very, very bad storm, and they were very concerned about they were going to lose their lives. They were actually able to get to the summit, and they found what is called the Tip Top House. This was in 1857 that they were hiking. There was the Tip Top House, which was a hostel that was at the summit of Mount Washington that had built in 1853, and they were actually able to take shelter in this building. They survived. They got down the mountain, and Sylvester Marsh, being basically a Renaissance man, said that, you know what, there has to be an easier way to get to the summit of the mountain. So he started thinking about it, and he thought that he would try and build a railroad. And at the time, he had to go to the New Hampshire legislature to get permission. So he went and gave his plan that he wanted to build this railroad. And they basically laughed him out of the building and called him Crazy Marsh. And they said, okay, if you want to build a railway to the top of the mountain, then we'll just give you a charter to actually build a railway to the moon, because it's just as likely to happen. Well, he did it. And from 1857 is when he first climbed the mountain and had his incident. In 1869, July 3rd, 1869, the railroad was completed, and it took its maiden voyage to the top of the mountain. So it went from 2,700 feet to 6,288 feet. That all had to be cleared. Track had to be put down. The other problem that he had was the grade, because it varies between 28% grade and it goes as high as 38%. So on Jacob's Ladder is the 38%, which basically means when you're in the coach, the person who was sitting in the front seat is actually 14 feet higher off of the ground than the person in the very back seat. So they had to develop, that's where the cog part comes in. It's like a bicycle sprocket. Basically, it's teeth. A regular railroad rides on the rails on either side. The cog, what happens is it's the center cog gear that propels the train up the mountain, and it's the only way that the train would be able to get up because of the high grade.
Hmm. And is it true you have two working steam locomotives, one more than 100 years old?
Yep, we have two. One is from 1875, and the other was built in 1908. Obviously, they've been worked on since then, but yes, they go back that far.
Ah, and knowing the New Hampshire weather in winter, how long is your operating season, and do you have a minimum age for participants?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because we are now running year-round. The summit closes, the buildings at the summit close mid-October just because of weather and the staffing. So we have only been able to go to the summit usually about the 20th of October is when the summit closes. So we haven't been able to go because there's no place for our people to go once they get there. So up until the past year, we've only run until probably the end of October. But, and I think it's even since Dan was there the last time, at 4,000 feet, we call it Wombeck Station. We have now built three separate decks with hot, we call them lean-tos, with shelters that are, but we have heat lamps in them, and we have a fire pit. So people in the wintertime and after the summit closes, we can go there. We have a fire pit. The kids can roast marshmallows. We have coffee and hot cocoa that is there. The views are spectacular. So we're now a year-round destination.
Oh, cool.
And the age limit, we don't have an age limit. I think it's children under 3 can sit on your lap. If they're going to sit in their own seat, there's a charge. But there is no age, no underage. You as older as young as you want to be on the train.
Excellent.
And Sue, having been on the cog with you, I love the views, the steep grades, and especially the historic narration. I learned so much. So would you say riding the cog is both an entertaining and an educational experience?
Entertaining, as you can say, as you said, Dan, we have some great, we have both a brakeman who is in the coach, and there's an engineer obviously running the engine. The brakeman the entire trip up is giving a narration. They talk about the history of the mountain, the fact that when you leave the base until you get to the summit, you go through different climate zones. You start out in the hardwood, and then when you end up, you're in the subarctic. So they talk about that. You learn about weather, you learn history, you learn physics, you learn weather, you learn geology. There's some plant life that is only grown at the summit and in Newfoundland. So there's a bunch of different things. And I know some schools have actually been able to get grant funding because there's such an educational component that they've been able to have their trips funded through grants.
Hmm.
How long is your off-season, and do you need to do maintenance on your facilities and locomotives, especially in view of their age?
We do. I think the last time we talked, which was right after COVID, we had gotten through the initial stages of COVID, we had just finished our re-railing project. So we had replaced the 25-pound rail with 100-pound rail for the entire 3-mile track. At that same time, we were just completing our 3,400 square foot new shop facility, which is we can now put all of our engines in there. We have a plasma cutter. We have robotic welders. We do all of our own maintenance on our coaches and on our engines. We actually build all of our coaches ourselves. We have some of the most talented woods craftsmen and steel workers that work right on facility, so we are able to do everything right on property. We may have to have some of the parts machined out, but pretty much all of our work is done in-house.
Hmm. And when people go, what do they find at the summit? Are there other ways to get there besides the train?
Yep, at the summit there is what they call the Sherman Adams Building, which houses the Mount Washington Observatory, and also a weather station, which is manned 365 days a year, every single hour. So they come up, and I believe in the wintertime it's like 3-week shifts, and they stay there round the clock, and they actually go out and do weather readings every single hour, and that is every single day, every single hour. And they do tours. We don't organize them, but you can organize a trip, so you could go up on the cog and do a tour. There is a museum that talks about the weather. There is also, as I said, the Tip Top House that saved Sylvester Marsh's life is still there. Mm-hmm. And there is also, there's a gift shop, and there's a small cafeteria-style dining area. And there are three ways, actually, to get to the summit of Mount Washington. You can obviously take the cog. On the opposite side of the mountain is the Mount Washington Auto Road, where you can either drive your own car up or you can take one of the Auto Road vans. And then, obviously, the other popular way to get there is to hike. And there are two separate trails that you can get to from the cog side of the mountain. There's the Jewel Trail and the Amonoosuc Ravine Trail. And both of those are, it takes about 4 hours each way. And that's if you're an experienced hiker. It is not something that if you're not an experienced hiker, you just want to say, oh, I'm going to go for a hike and I'm going to hike to the summit of Mount Washington. Because it's not treacherous, but it's challenging. And as I said, the weather can change on a dime.
Mm. Now that we're into April, is your busiest season just ahead? And what will past riders find this year that they haven't seen before?
Well, as I said, we now have the Wambeck Station. It's not something that they haven't seen before. The first time we did it last year, for the first time, we had an event called Race the Cog. And basically, it's these are what I would consider, it's not road racing, it's not like running the Boston Marathon. This is very much a rocky trail that is beside the tracks. So they will leave at the base of the mountain at the same time that one of our biodiesel engines leaves the Marshfield Station. And they will race the train to see if the runner or the train gets there first. Last year, actually, the runner beat the train by 3 minutes. It took him 39 minutes and I have to get this right, 39 minutes and 14 seconds. He beat the train by 3 minutes. And we're doing that event again on June 24th. And there are people have already registered, but if you have somebody who's interested in running it, then obviously they can check out Race the Cog. But there is also, there will be a train going up alongside the runners, cheering the runners on. So that's an exciting event that we've got going on this year. Other than that, other than the year-round operation, I think those are our two big things that we've got going on this year.
And unfortunately, Sue, we've got to move on to our next guest, but we've been talking with Sue Presby, co-owner of the Mount Washington Cog Railway. For reservations and more, excuse me, how do listeners contact you?
Well, there's two ways. There's www.thecog.com, and I encourage you to go there because the pictures on there speak much better than I do. You can also call the 800 number, which is 1-800-922-8825, or you can just drive up Route 93, come up from Boston. We're about 120 miles from Boston, or down from Canada, 170 miles.
Okay. And your website?
www.thecog.com.
Okay, and you're listening to the 500th anniversary episode of Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent Lee. Check us out on iTunes, blogtalkradio.com, or the Travel Itch Radio Facebook page. Moving on, we're bringing in Tony Mua, not only my friend, but a guy who shares my birthday of May 6th, not too far away. So happy birthday, Tony, in advance. Let's celebrate with a pizza or something chocolate on your Slice of Brooklyn bus tours. Tell us how a small pizza tour evolved into so many different offerings.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Mary Ellen. I just, as we say in Brooklyn, mazel tov. This is an honor. I've been a part of many of these with you, and I look forward to being a part of many more, Dan. But it's great, great to see how far you've come along. And yes, early happy birthday to you as well, and it's great to be here. Thank you again.
Okay, our pleasure. How did you expand a small pizza tour into what you're doing now?
Well, basically, you know, I left 20 years in healthcare. You know, I was, as the proud Brooklynite, I just loved the borough, and I wanted to be able to create a way for people to experience, you know, the things that have made Brooklyn famous, its foods, its neighborhoods, its landmarks, its movie locations. As you know, we started with the pizza tour, which was back in 2005. This will be our 18th year doing tours, which is crazy the way time flies, as I'm sure you know. But we started with the pizza tour and then developed the Best of Brooklyn tour that includes a lunch stop at Junior's and Brooklyn Heights and Greenwood Cemetery. And, you know, we have our Christmas lights tour. And, you know, we took a big hit like many people did during COVID, and we shut down in March. I know, remember the date exactly, March 9th, 2020. Unfortunately, we're still only operating at about 30%, but NYC and Company is predicting about 60 million visitors to New York City this year, which is a great number, but as you know, that's a fraction of what normally comes. So I think we're still in the recovery phase, but I'm excited to see what the summer brings. We're relaunching, I'm happy to announce, we're relaunching our chocolate tour next month. And that was another tour that unfortunately had to take a back seat because with COVID, you know, you lose staff members. And one of my tour guides who had been with me forever, my cousin Paula, she during COVID got married, had a baby. So you're kind of trying to, you keep trying to adapt. But we're still here, just like any other, you know, Brooklynite, you could knock us down, but we keep getting up, you know. So we hope to be here for a while. And then the real goal this year is to be able to, as I said, we're relaunching the Chocolate Tour because that had been our most recent tour just before COVID. What we're really hoping to do is bring it full circle and actually get a chance to launch our brewery and distillery tour, which sadly was supposed to launch on April 1st of 2020, but we shut down the month before. And so, you know, when you come back from COVID, you know, who's not working where they were working, who's not familiar with plans that were made. And it's been a real uphill battle, but, you know, no more so than when I first started. And so you adapt and you do different things to get the word out. But it's still one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. I mean, the joy of exposing people to Brooklyn. I mean, can you imagine what it's like when you have a bus full of people and the you know, you've got people from Australia, from Germany, Nebraska, Canada, you know, California, Ohio. I mean, to get people from around the country and around the world and, you know, take them to Brooklyn for the first time and take them literally from Dumbo over the Manhattan Bridge all the way down to Coney Island, which for some people is a bucket list location. It's every day is really rewarding. So we're staying hopeful, like many people are, and we know that it's going to bounce back. And we've stayed in touch with our customers who have been loyal, and we try to have a good social media presence and adapting. That's what it's all about.
And your company's name is very clever. A slice of Brooklyn is obviously a double meaning, since you give passengers slices of Brooklyn history as well as slices of the world-famous Brooklyn pizza. Is it the water that makes the pizza so terrific?
Sure, of course. The water, the people making it, of course. And I thank you for saying that about our company. The other thing that I'm proud of is our official slogan, which is, of course, Manhattan, forget about it. I've had that copyrighted and trademarked.
Since I've been on your tours twice, Tony, I know passengers get off the bus several times, bypass the lines and the pizza places, and spend most of their time laughing at the commentary of you and your tour guides. I learned more about Brooklyn in one afternoon than in my whole life before my first day on your minibus.
That's awesome, Dan. I really appreciate you saying that. You know, there are certain things that you know, we love to hear, and we love hearing things like that, and we love how, you know, even we just had a woman who just came, and we do a lot of group tours for tour operators. You know, a lot of Brooklynites have left, you know, they're retired and they move into a lot of these 55 and over communities. And so, you know, many of them do bus trips. And we just did one for a group from New Jersey, and she came back with her son. She grew up in Brooklyn, but her young son obviously grew up in New Jersey. But she had a blast just showing her son the old stomping grounds. And she said to us, you know, for, you know, to be a Brooklynite and still be able to learn about my borough is awesome. And so we always say, you know, whether you've been to Brooklyn before, you've never been to Brooklyn before, we kind of will start you out with a clean slate and give you a little bit of everything, you know, so when you're done, you really have a better understanding and grasp of the borough. And it's also important for people who aren't from here to get the lay of the land, you know what I mean? For someone to see, you know, they may come here and say, okay, well, I don't know if I'm going to jump on a train and take a 45-minute train ride out to Coney Island. But once we get on the bus and we show them, you know, and they're seeing the lay of the land of Brooklyn, so to speak, and realize that between Manhattan and Coney Island, there are just hundreds of things that you could see and do and eat in Brooklyn before you even get there. And so, you know, somebody, one of my friends once said that we're sort of like these ambassadors to Brooklyn. And, I'll take it. I'll take that title.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you were a former healthcare professional. How and why did you make such a total career switch? And how big a challenge was it?
Well, that's a great question, Mary Ellen. Thank you. I was a respiratory therapist for 20 years. I basically took care of trach patients on ventilators, from premature babies to seniors to the emergency room. And I worked at St. Vincent's Hospital in Manhattan throughout the 90s. And I worked a 12-hour shift, which allowed me the luxury of traveling throughout the 90s. And I loved traveling. And whenever I would travel, I would go off the beaten path and locals would show me around. And I would reciprocate for them by showing them around when they came to visit. And then soon enough, you'll find that they were sending their family members and asking if I would show them around. And oftentimes, I would just ask them to put gas in my car. And, you know, and I would just love showing them around. And so little by little, healthcare was changing. I was kind of getting burnt out after the 20-year mark. And I said, what am I going to do? I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I was talking to my friends. It's kind of like that scene in The Godfather when Johnny Fontaine is crying to the godfather. He slaps her. He goes, "You're going to act like a man." And, you know, my friends were like, "Are you kidding me? What is it?" You're like, you know, every time we talk to you, you're showing someone around the Brooklyn. We always say that you're like, you know, that you love your borough. You know, why don't you do this? This is what you're meant to do. And a light went off. And sometimes it's right under our noses, and we need friends and loved ones to point it out to us, right? So I thought to myself, well, you know, I mean, I do love Brooklyn. There are no tours of Brooklyn. At the time, Mayor Giuliani was increasing tourism to New York City, which was a great move, but I still felt that it was too Manhattan-centric. And I thought, well, what about the boroughs? And, like, here we are 18 years later, and some of the other boroughs are still trying to make some headway as far as, you know, chipping away, you know, at the tourism industry and trying to get people to come and visit. I just happened, you know, it was one of those things that worked out because there hadn't been a tour of Brooklyn in years, let alone a bus tour of Brooklyn. And so it was one of those things that kind of took off. And I thought, well, maybe if we do this on a bus, and, you know, one of our trademarks is we use the screens of the bus with a DVD presentation. So if we're driving by the old, you know, the old Paramount Theater in Brooklyn, it's not there anymore. It's now Long Island University, but I can show you a photo of where it stood, you know, right before we go in for lunch at Junior's. And so we use those screens for slides. And I remember taking people from England to see where Saturday Night Fever was filmed. And if they hadn't seen the movie, they didn't know what I was talking about. So now we use the screens of the bus to show the movie clips. And, well, my gosh, the movie locations included on our tours include The Godfather, Moonstruck, As Good As It Gets, Dog Day Afternoon, as I said, Saturday Night Fever, The Warriors. I mean, and so, you know, that along with slides and music. And so I thought, well, if we could do that, you know, you're always on a bus and nobody's using those screens. What if we did that to enhance the experience? And this was before, you know, things like the ride came along with, you know, with sort of that system, because I think that always enhances, you know, the experience for people when you have stuff that you can show or play up on the screens. And so that was it. And it was a challenge. It was a challenge. At first, it wasn't so much of a challenge because it was something people wanted. And Beth Hartpaz, who was the travel editor of the Associated Press, lived in Park Slope, Brooklyn, still does. And she reached out to me and did a little 3-paragraph piece that went out to Parade Magazine and the Sunday newspaper across the country. And that was incredible. And that really helped out. And a couple of years later, it helped that the Today Show did a piece on us. And that went out, you know, when they were the number one rated show. There were challenges because when you start a company like this, you know, you go without health insurance because you're putting everything into your business. But it was a labor of love, you know, and it still is. I mean, I certainly, it's challenging to deal with the things I'm not familiar with, like social media and search engine optimization and all these things that these younger kids are so much better at. But, you know, we're chugging along, and, you know, it's sort of like we're at the 18-year mark, and so we hope we'll be around for a while longer.
So do you still pick up passengers?
As I asked Jay Smith, where do you recruit your buses, and do you give them a crash course in Brooklyn history, like what celebrities are born there, what movies?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you were breaking up, and I think you asked me about what was the first question, where we recruit who?
Yeah, I asked, where do you get your buses, and do you give them a crash course in Brooklyn history, such as what celebrities were born there and what movies were made there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that sets us apart is the fact that we actually go pick people up in Manhattan. I never thought, you know, I never felt that it was kosher, so to speak, to ask someone, and certainly not 18 years ago. People were not jumping on a train and coming to Brooklyn anyway. Now it's different. But I thought, well, if we want them to take the tours, we have to go to Manhattan. And then I was like, you know, how do we keep people entertained the entire time? So, of course, you know, you learn about celebrities who are from here. Maybe you'll see where they live. As I said, the movie locations, there's a little bit of architecture. There's landmarks that people are familiar with, you know, being able to take them for the best photo under the Brooklyn Bridge, which people don't realize where the location is, and just little things like that, you know, and it never gets tiring. Every time doing a tour, whether I do it or one of my guides does it, you never tire of just seeing your borough through the eyes of someone else. You know, they say, oh, you've been doing this 18 years. every day is a different day because you're experiencing it through the eyes of people who've never been there before. And sometimes for many of them, all they know of Brooklyn is maybe because they remember the chase scene from The French Connection, or they remember seeing Dog Day Afternoon. And suddenly, I've had people say to me at the end of the tour sometimes, my gosh, I felt, you know, it's a 4.5-hour tour. They said, I felt like I was on a movie set the entire time, because people don't realize how much Brooklyn is a part of their consciousness, whether it's the Brooklyn Dodgers, whether it's pizza, whether it's Coney Island, whether it's Junior's Cheesecake, whether it's, you know, I mean, you know, anything in Brooklyn that you can think of, people, to some people, it's been a faraway place. And so there's been no greater joy than being able to get a bunch of people on a bus who at first are very timid, very shy. No one's talking to each other. And by the end of the tour, everyone's talking and having a great time. And the real kicker is when we say to them at the end of the tour, okay, how many of you, by show of hands, and please be honest, can see yourselves coming back to visit Brooklyn again? And all the hands go up. And that's all I need to see, that we've introduced people to
this amazing place. Tony, we need your website, please.
Yes, sir. The website is easy. It's aSliceOfBrooklyn.com. aSliceOfBrooklyn.com.
Okay, we need to move on. So guest number three on our hour-long 500th anniversary special has been Tony Mua of A Slice of Brooklyn Bus Tours. Thank you, Tony. And now it's time for a rest. Let's head west to the Phoenician, my favorite resort on the planet, and talk to another friend of the show, Denise Thielman. This is a sprawling luxury resort in the desert, on the border of Phoenix and Scottsdale, but guests never need to leave, do they, Denise?
No, absolutely not. There's so much to do. We sit on 254 acres right at the base of Camelback Mountain. There's 8 dining options. There's spa. There's golf. There's an athletic club. There's 5 pools. So basically, the Phoenician is a destination in and of itself.
And because you have such benign climate, don't guests spend most of their time outdoors? Tell us all about that.
Yes, absolutely. We're very fortunate here in the Valley of the Sun that we have 300 days a year of sunshine, rarely any humidity. So it's a very nice climate and perfect for being outdoors and doing outdoor activities. So whether that's just taking a walk in Old Town Scottsdale and visiting the art galleries, or hiking Camelback Mountain, or going to a baseball game. Spring training is huge here. We just finished that up. We've got 15 Major League Baseball teams that make the Scottsdale and the Valley of the Sun their home for training. So there's all kinds of things to do, and you just can't beat the sunrises and the sunsets. No one or two are the same.
Mm. Well, speaking of water, I love your koi fish, who always seem to be begging for food from the people who pass by. For listeners who don't know, they look like goldfish that ate way too much at the midnight buffet.
Yes, they do. They look like very, very large goldfish, beautiful coloring. And they're in part of our water features, and guests can feed them, and they're used to the guests feeding them, that's for sure.
Hmm. Well, we know the Phoenician is proud of its multiple culinary options. It's a great place to dine with a view, desert landscape dotted by palms and surrounded by mountains. But please share, where should out-of-towners plan to eat?
That's a really good question, because there are so many offerings within the Valley, and especially Scottsdale. It really has a very unique and popular culinary scene. So whether you're staying at the Phoenician and you want to eat at J&G Steakhouse, which is on the 5th level of the resort, so you get incredible views of the Valley and beyond, or you want to try something that's a little bit more intimate, where the menu items are decided by the chef the day that you come. Each and every day, they make a decision on what they're serving that night, and that restaurant is called F&B. So there's the gamut of everything in between both of those ends of the spectrum. There's all kinds of casual eateries as well as fine dining, so you can't go wrong in anything you choose.
Hmm. And, you know, guests of the Phoenician always enjoy walking around the property with the cameras. I remember walking to the front entrance just to get pictures of the Phoenician sign surrounded by those beautiful desert flowers. Is everything in bloom all the time, or does it just look that way?
Well, most of it is, yes. Now, some of the actual native cacti that you see will just bloom in the spring, so kind of April, May, maybe even a little bit into June. But the remainder of the flora that we have there on property is managed by our landscaping team. And actually, a lot of those flowers that you will see as you come up the drive are switched out every 2 to 3 months. So everything is always in bloom, always very colorful. And, of course, right now with it being spring, the colors are so vibrant. It just like looks like a color palette.
Denise, when I travel, I am big on three things: location, location, and location. The Phoenician's in a perfect spot, not too far from Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, downtown Phoenix, Old Town, Scottsdale, and, of course, Chase Field, home of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Do you agree, Denise?
Oh, absolutely. We're in an ideal location. Again, one being at the base of Camelback Mountain. We call it the sunny side of Camelback Mountain. You're literally less than 5 minutes from Old Town Scottsdale. You're about 30 minutes or so from downtown Phoenix. But again, very close to everything, shopping, dining, activities. It's just a great location. But yet, we sit far off and away from kind of the street area. So when you first come to the Phoenician and you come off of Camelback Road and you make that turn into the drive, it's a little bit of a surprise to see this sprawling resort really at the base of the mountain and just surrounded by a beautiful desert.
Now, Denise, the Phoenician has won and deserves many awards. I know it's a 5-star, 5-diamond property, and even has a resort within a resort that has won many honors. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, absolutely. That is the Canyon Suites at the Phoenician, which is exactly right. As you said, it is our resort within a resort. So it's a boutique hotel. It's a much more intimate, exclusive experience. It has 60 rooms, 40 of which are suites. Its own private pool with cabanas for rent. They have a complimentary executive breakfast every morning, but yet they have access to everything on the Phoenician Resort grounds. So it's the perfect combination of a little bit more off the beaten path and private, but yet, again, access to all kinds of dining activities and services of the Phoenician.
Denise, I wanted to ask you, too, about some of the attractions people can see nearby. Can you talk about some of those?
Yes. Again, we have a lot of art galleries. There's the Scottsdale Art Walk that takes place on Thursday night, so that's literally minutes from us. There's the Musical Instrument Museum, the Desert Botanical Garden. Again, as I mentioned, spring training. There's stadiums that host the teams throughout the valley, but Scottsdale Stadium, again, is about 5 minutes from the Phoenician. You've got Scottsdale Fashion Square, which is the largest enclosed mall in the United States for all of those that would like a little retail therapy. Again, great restaurants. And if you want to be outdoors, you want to do horseback riding, biking, hiking, again, incredible opportunities. It just doesn't get any better than Arizona.
And the Heard Museum is one of your big attractions, too.
Absolutely, yes. It's Heard Museum is a Native American museum where you learn about the history and the culture of the tribes here and throughout the United States. It's a wonderful must-do museum when you're here.
And I love the Musical Instrument Museum, too. That was a favorite when I was out there.
Yes, it's wonderful, and it's set up so that you walk through the 7 different continents. So as you go to each continent, you learn about the history of the music there and how it's developed and what is the focus of their music and the types of instruments they have. And then they have fun things from time to time. For a while there, they had the piano that Imagine was written on. And so you never know what you're going to see there. It can be different every time, but it's such a depth of history and culture. It's amazing.
And how far has that light rail system been extended?
They're still working on it. It's gotten out to the East Valley towards kind of like the Mesa region. So it's a great way to get downtown, to get to Chase Field, to see, the Arizona Diamondbacks. We even have a college bowl game that we host at Chase Field, the Guaranteed Rate Bowl, every December, which is a really fun experience because you get to see college football action in a baseball stadium.
That's pretty good. That is really good. Mary Ellen?
So we've been talking to Denise Seelman of the Phoenician, a great place in a great location. How do listeners learn more about it?
They can go to thephoenician.com. For our boutique hotel on property, the Canyon Suites at the Phoenician, they can visit canyonsuites.com.
And Denise, before we sign off with you, is there anything you would like to add?
One thing I'd like to add is just for people that maybe would like to come out to the Phoenician and you haven't been here before, summer is our slow season. People think, oh, but, you know, it's hot. It's the perfect time to visit because you're going to get the best rates of the year. It's not as crowded. If it's hot, you're outside at the pool or you're inside in the air conditioning, dining, or enjoying one of our indoor activities. We have whole kinds of seasonal celebrations for Memorial Day, 4th of July. And this year, in addition to having the best rates of the year, we're also offering a nightly $50 resort credit that you could use towards spa or golf or dining.
And I was out there in the summer once for a Sabre convention, Society for American Baseball Research, and I saw the only live no-hitter I've ever seen, and it was in that ballpark, which has a dome, and it was pitched against Randy Johnson, the Hall of Famer. He was the losing pitcher, 1-0. The winning pitcher was Jose Jimenez of the St. Louis Cardinals, the only complete game he ever pitched in the major leagues.
Wow. What a great story, and what a great event to see.
Yes, it was incredible. In the fourth inning, I remember saying to the guy next to me, this guy's going to pitch a no-hitter, sure enough.
Really? Yep, you knew it. You could feel it. That's awesome.
That was really amazing. Okay, and unfortunately, we have to go, so Denise, want to give the Phoenician website, please?
Yes, it is thephoenician.com, and again, canyonsuites.com for our boutique hotel on property.
Okay, we've been talking with Denise Seelman of the Phoenician, a great place and a great location. And that is it.
Thank you so much.
The 500th anniversary special of Travel Witch Radio. Mary Ellen, did you want to say something?
No.
Did I cut you off?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Many thanks to my friends and colleagues, Jay Smith of Sports Travel and Tours, Sue Presby of the Mount Washington Cobb Railway, Tony Mua of the Slice of Brooklyn Bus Tours, and, of course, Denise Seelman of the Phoenician. Hope to see all of you soon. And now that baseball is in full swing again, there's nothing better for off days and rain delays than a good baseball book, like my latest, Baseball's Memorable Misses, an unabashed look at baseball's craziest zeros. The funniest and most unusual baseball book of the year. It's an illustrated and entertaining paperback, just $14.99 at your bookstore, and even less from Amazon.com. Sandy Koufax is on the cover. Such a deal. Get it tonight. And that's it for this special edition of Travel Witch Radio. Next week, back at our usual half-hour format, same station, same time, we'll learn about Charlottesville, Virginia, the home of Thomas Jefferson, from Brandon Ushery. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with co-host Mary Ellen Nugent Lee, saying thank you so much for your time this time. Until next time, good night and stay safe.